Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Why is Heritage Radio Network important to you?
HRN is very nostalgic to go into because it's really the only place that you have this really warm, homey experience to watch people get together and talk about the things that really make a difference.
It's really fun when I ask guests, do you want to be on Heritage? And they're like, at Roberta's? Yes, 100%.
I believe that we all are really trying to bring people together.
I think getting more people excited about good, local, well-crafted food and away from big ag and tasteless commodity food is so important.
It's kind of an honor to be sitting there with so many, in a space where so many other people have sat.
Join HRN's vibrant community of thoughtful eaters. Become a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate. This episode is brought to you by Fair Kitchens. Learn about the Fair Kitchens Code and join the movement at fairkitchens.com.
Good morning. Good morning. Today is Thursday, December 19th. Did you guys miss me?
Oh, terrible. Definitely.
Were you crying last Thursday? Patrick and Traig were here in the studio without me. I am Emily Pearson, in case you've forgotten my voice. This is the Main Course OG. I'm here with Patrick Martins, my co-host.
Always remember, she has the deepest voice. That's how you know it's Emily. The most mannish voice, if you will. No, just kidding.
Deepest voice of some deepest. Women. I'm not especially high-pitched.
A strong voice.
Thank you. I'll take it.
I'm Patrick Martins.
And we also have our regular panelist and co-host, I would say, Trigg Brown.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, my name's Trigg. Nice to see you guys, or talk to you guys.
I really like the promo leading into the show today. It was, why is HRN important to you? And I think I recognized a few voices of the different hosts on the show. Patrick, why is HRN important to you?
Well, I mean, wow, the 13,000 episodes in, and they're just dipping their toe into all the voices out there that are essentially go uncovered. People in food, you know, whether it be fishermen or farmers or people in foreign countries working to preserve a particular variety of honey or honeybee, winemakers, people opening wine shops in neighborhoods where one might not have existed before, you know, I mean, it's just awesome.
No, I think it covers...
It runs
the gamut for sure. It's, you know... There's a show for everybody, and, you know, there might be a show that you didn't think would cover something. You know, like ours, we get to have cast a very wide net with sort of how we touch upon sustainability and food and beverage. And also,
those bigger media sources, I would definitely say they care about those issues, of course. But then why haven't you done more for it? Give it a section. Cover it every week. Talk about the serious issues behind it. So in the lack of that, it provided an opportunity for us to fill that void. And we're hoping that they expand those programs. I mean, I heard people at like CBS didn't even have a food guy 15 years ago.
No, it was always like the styles editor or the lifestyle
editor cross over.
Would cover food or beverage. But what did that mean? They thought it was like, cool to go out and eat something and like hope that a restaurant was going to comp them because they said they were worth People Magazine or whatever it might be.
Now, are you telling me global warming is not a food story. That's a food story first.
I know. Well, do you want it in the food section or the science section?
Although I am secretly looking forward to when papayas and bananas can be grown outside in Brooklyn. It is freezing.
We
right
did.
Now.
We did ask this question. I think it was I don't know, a month or so ago on the show. You know, what food or ingredient is global warming helping in a way? Or so. Patrick wants mangoes growing in Brooklyn.
If you would listen to the show last week, we said, I said, well, you know, would you pick a restaurant based off of sustainability? And Trig, and basically the consensus of everyone in the studio was like, no, we're going to pick the best restaurant.
But
the sustainability
I think
thing follows.
The underlying point to that was, though, is that, you know, ideally restaurants with best practices will be floating to the top. Like, good ideas naturally float to the top. So, you know, you don't have to make a choice between quality and best practices. You make that choice together.
For sure. No, I think that makes sense. Absolutely. They should go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And I think slowly over time they will, and they are. This is our last episode for 2019. Heritage Radio Network goes on winter break as of tomorrow. And I think we're back in the middle of January. Of course, you can listen to old episodes through the podcast store and at heritageradionetwork.org. You can also become a member, which we hope you will. So Christmas is less than a week away. We're going a little crazy over at Heritage Foods. I'm sure everyone is. I know this is like holiday party season. Restaurants are in full swing. What do you guys all have planned? Trig, you taking any time off at Winsun?
Yeah, we do this ridiculous thing where we close for the week of Christmas. yeah, it's like it's a hard hit on revenue every year. But and you know, I think we might have reached the point next year where we can't do it anymore. But you know, maybe we'll just minimize it a little bit. But you know, we close Monday through Friday, and I think it's just really important for staff and you know, our little like work family to be able to see their families over Christmas. And you know, even if you don't celebrate Christmas, it's like a opportunity to be together with people you know you love. And
I think you're going to get more employment applications this week. People are going to be like, no, so exactly. I heard you
so
say
smart.
On the air next year, I can take a
Have you considered staying closed next year as well, but maybe putting out a bunch of food and doing it like the honor system, like in Vermont, where you just can like take an apple and leave
Well, we do that
cents.
Over Thanksgiving. We close on Thanksgiving as well, and the day of and the day after, and we do like a potluck. And it's, you know, everybody can come and bring whoever. Just it's you know, nature of potluck. It can grow as much as
Patrick and I were down in North Carolina earlier this year, and someone was saying the guy who makes the local moonshine, he just leaves it in a box, and you're supposed to like leave $30 and mm-hmm. take a little mason jar, and it's purely on the honor system. I don't know if that works in New York City so well.
Well, yeah, you see less and less of it. I was actually sad to see that the turtles on Houston Street, remember there was that little turtle park on Houston and Bowery or something. It was on the south side under that big Christmas tree. Anyway, I think people abused the turtles, and now the turtles aren't there anymore.
They abused the turtles?
Well, were they there all year round? Was it a turtle sanctuary?
Yeah, it was a turtle sanctuary for sure. There were dozens. I don't know. It's just hard to... Yeah, the honor system might not work here, unfortunately, in the city. Although I think people are very honest here. But there's so many people, it increases the chance that there'll be that
1%. It's true. It makes those of us who are honest, you know, we really get swept under.
You also think
people
that New Yorkers
return phones all the time.
Really polite, too. You think that?
I believe in civil inattention. Civil inattention. You're civil, but you're inattentive to the every sneeze on the subway.
I agree. I just feel like that needed to be fleshed out a little bit. I appreciate
it. But if someone fell, I would be right there. And I think New Yorker would be the first. I once came in with a group of Amish, 15 Amish people, all in their little bonnets. Everyone got up. It was an instant, all different races, creeds, sexes, ages, everyone up. Let the Amish sit. You know, it's very touching, you know. That's a real New York moment.
Was it like a moment of people feeling a little uncomfortable? Or
the,
well, they
the
knew
Amish
the...
were uncomfortable because they were like, how long do the subway doors open for? And I'm like, you have plenty of time for your kids to get in, like 5-7 seconds. They were like, oh my God. I was like, if any of you don't make it in.
Get off of the next stop.
Wait for the next train and we'll wait for you.
Oh my gosh. That really
We only
is
took
true.
It one stop.
I think
so. They all sat down just for one stop and then got up. And
I always do think that for out of towners, you should have that like one chat right before. If you're with a big group, you should be like,
oh, definitely.
Okay, if you really don't make it, we are going to meet at the next stop. But I guess not with cell phones.
Or even the chat.
Oh,
about-
no cell phones for the Amish.
Well, it was terrifying. Well, this was way before those. But if you run to the previous stop to like get your kid in this, meanwhile, the kid goes to the next stop, it's hard to know what to do.
Yeah.
Have you had any child run-ins? So we have a special guest in the studio today who we're about to introduce. We have Andre Mack, who is a sommelier, winemaker, graphic designer, and now the proprietor and frontman of a ham bar and a wine shop in Prospect Lefferts Garden. Andre, you can unmute yourself. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning. How is everyone?
We're good. You wanted to chime in about the Subway child experience?
No, what do you do with your child?
We just tell our kids, it's like you get off, you stay on the same car, and you get off on the next exit in the exact same car, and you wait right there. So no one gets out and runs. You get, you know, if my kid was left there, if I missed the train, he gets off at the next stop. Right in the same car. I get on the same car, and then he's there.
I think that's it. Good plan.
I once was in a cab accident. It hit. Someone was actually escaping from a robbery, and it hit my cab, and I was being sent home alone from my mother's friends to my mom's house, maybe 1977, 78. And I remember the cops came, and I was like, I want to go home. And they sent me home with a guy, and I never knew. He wasn't a policeman, and I just wondered if he had volunteered at the side of the crime. And you know,
he wasn't like a child services escort?
No. Just by like today's standards, you to his no way. And, yeah. Or hurt me in the cab. I don't know. You know
but no, I
know where I live.
I feel like that kind of touches back. Like, you know, there's like a Southern hospitality versus civil inattentiveness. And there's, you know, like having the conversation about the train important with out-of-towners, but also just like, you know, there is kind of an etiquette, right? And that's like... I think distinguishing that, I think that's important for people.
Also, like the people that you engage and the people that I think, as you're saying, the inattentiveness, the people you choose not to engage with, because that sort of opens a whole little can of worms. Like, you know, there's the people that you give attention to on the subway and the people that you're like,
you don't have to be rude to somebody begging for money, but there's like other ways that you can help them, or there's ways that you can, you know, engage without, you know, opening Pandora's box or something.
Well, I'm very, New York is like me myself, you know, direct and upfront and congratulatory, but also critical. Like I was being yelled at by this lady at the Natural History Museum, yelled at, screaming top of her lungs. So, you know, as a good New Yorker, I took a photo of her just to make her think that I would possibly send it to her boss.
Was it a photo or was it like a full-on video? Like, I am recording you.
When I got the photo, though, I had just taken a picture of, like, the floor. I wasn't really committed to doing it, but I wanted to show, you know. And so that's a New Yorker thing. It's a little bit, like, pushed back. Whereas in the South, I think they're more polite and genteel and might engage, more tolerant maybe, but passive-aggressive possibly and...
Perhaps. I think sometimes, you know.
I don't know. My husband went on a whole, like, Good Samaritan thing the other day. He called me, and he was like, I was driving behind a FedEx truck on Henry Street, which in, like, Brooklyn Heights, Cobble Hill is super narrow. And someone was parked in an annoying way. Their wheel was out. But the FedEx truck hit the wheel. The wheel got punctured. And when he hit the wheel of the other car, he hit the other car on the side of the road, scraped it, and put a hole in the door. And Dennis was, he actually like followed the FedEx driver. And like when he got out, the guy got out to deliver a package. And he was like, did you know you just hit two cars? The guy sincerely had no idea.
And then drove off.
Well, gave him a fake phone number for FedEx or for him. Because he was like, hey, what's your name? You know, like, I don't want you to get in trouble, but, like, FedEx should take care of this. And, like, we like FedEx a lot at, you know, Heritage. And but Dennis took a picture of the vehicle number and the plate, and he wrote a note on both cars. And both cars, like, called him and were like, thank you. One was like, you're my hero. I'm like, Dennis, you just, like, have nothing to do this afternoon? He was like, no, I will hope someone would have done it for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
He complained about the FedEx. He said it was FedEx.
Do you
think that'll affect your deliveries that you're able to get?
I specifically said,
where's my Christmas?
Wait, Patrick, what's your take on this?
I did make sure that he did not give our address or our last name. And then he was like, I did have to be part of the police report. They do know.
If I smashed the hell out of their car, I would absolutely leave a note and make sure.
No, what's
if
your take on your loyalty to FedEx here?
I love it. If I just scraped the car, hey, you're in New York, kid. Like, the cars get bumped and nicked and screamed at bumpers. Come on, that's what a bumper is. People have covers for their bumpers, like little rubber buddies.
I know, it's a bumper.
I don't know.
But bumpers have changed, though. Bumpers used to be a piece of metal that wasn't cosmetically,
yeah,
like for the car, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
right. Those have changed now, but if you scrape them, but I believe the same thing. It's like it's made
but
for
this
double.
Was,
if
I'm
there, parking, there's also a difference between a tap, like a New York tap, and like, you know, destroying someone's plastic bumper. And you know, I
this,
came up to my truck,
truck
the other day was
punctured
smashed.
The
destroying,
side
of course, you know, yeah, destroyed.
I mean,
it
this
has
like
a
thousands
nick
of
it
dollars worth of
yeah.
Repairs.
That's what I came up to my truck the other day, and I've been asleep in my apartment. I woke up, you know, 5 a.m. to go to work. I went outside, and my truck was smashed. The front left side of it smashed. The wheel exploded, and it was popped up on the sidewalk.
See, no note. No, wait.
No note. I was, like, getting ready to, like, solicit, you know, landlords and get the security footage. Called the cops. They came. They're like, hey, don't worry. The guy filled out a report last night.
Wow.
I mean, it's like, you know, super awesome.
But
yeah,
kind of weird that he didn't also leave a note.
Super weird they didn't leave a note, but I'd much prefer him call the police and leave an honest report than, you know.
Do you pick up your dog's poop all the time, 100% of the time?
If I'm in Virginia, absolutely not. But if I'm, on the street in front of my home.
80%,
100%? I mean, 100% where I should pick it up, I pick it up.
Okay.
Patrick?
I mean, what are you eliminating? Where I should park? What are you eliminating?
Yeah, I mean,
is
Highland Park
on
is a
50-acre
park. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's not, you don't play in the woods in some place. You know what I mean? Sometimes I'll let, but
you
like,
mean in New York? Yeah.
But you know, I mean,
Patrick, Eastern Parkway, a little.
No,
kick?
I do.
My dog's poop bigger than Sniffy.
I know for sure. That's what I mean. Sometimes it's like an ordeal.
But I guess the real question is, do you curb your dog?
Meaning?
Like, meaning that whole expression means curb your dog. It means that your dog is actually supposed to poop on the other side of the curb in the street where the street cleaners go and pick it up.
I'm
not
so
on the other side.
quote unquote relieved that he's relieving himself that I just still take it, because the other option with my puppy is that it's in the house.
Yeah.
That's a great history lesson though. I didn't know that.
I'm
pretty sure
there was a huge argument on my street about it. Wow. Like the guy was screaming at a guy and the dog owner's like, what, he's supposed to go on the street? And the guy's like, yeah, he's supposed to go where you actually clean it, because the homeowner has to come out and spray it,
because
you don't get it all or like whatever. But
it's
an interesting thing. Yeah, I it took a minute.
I'm
not
using
a
person.
Sign that says, you know, curb your dog, and if you look at it carefully, the dog is on like on the curbside or the street.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I do find it absurd when there are those beautiful little tree things all throughout the streets. You know, they're little fences, tiny fences with the tree in it, and they're like, curb your dog. If they're flowers, of course, roses, you don't want your dog to pee on, but they're like, curb your dog. I'm like, this is the only part of green in the city.
It's winter. It's only full of dead leaves.
Yeah. Curb your dog. What's so precious here?
You know what is frustrating, though? When you like, you know, I live out over here in Bushwick, and like, you know, people just like throw trash on the ground, and then they're worried about the
dog.
That's terrible. Yeah, it's like, come on, like, let's like, you know, let's walk before we can.
Yeah, no, I hear you. There was a door in the middle of our block here on Siegel for 2 days. Did you see it?
No, did you walk through it?
I mean, I like walked around it. It was just outrageous. People just like don't.
Well, mattresses
organize.
Are left a lot. Because what the hell do you do with?
You're
a
supposed
mattress?
To call for like special pickup, but I don't really think anybody does.
They're just infested with bed bugs.
Ugh.
I'm 47th between like 10th and 11th.
Yeah, that goes.
30 mattresses
that goes really
an
well.
Hour.
All right, we tend to like to play this game on the show. We're gonna have a quick round
charming
of
game.
Fuck, marry, kill. And wine is the theme today.
Wow.
So I ask you all, red, white, rosé, or you could sub one out for champagne. Andre, you're the wine man in the room.
All of it.
Did you just say Andre Heston Mack of the brand new and Sons Ham Bar here in Brooklyn and Maison Noir Wines in Oregon's Willamette Valley? That's who it's
talking. You are correct. I had done a small intro before, but you were correct. That is a further one. Tell
that
us.
That is me. I am all. I'm all of the above. I mean,
does
I'm the
Maison,
wine guy.
Does Maison Noir Wines have all four?
All four. We make a sparkling that releases next fall.
Has sparkling taken a jump in the past 20 years? I mean, obviously, champagne and sparkling is always a huge part of history, but is it now an equal section to red and whites? Has anything changed or nothing?
I would have to say domestically there has been more sparkling wine, and just with the advent of Patinet, which is sparkling, everybody's making it. You know, it seems that it's a category that has jumped and grown domestically for sure.
And then obviously it has to be called sparkling wine. It can't be champagne unless it comes from champagne.
I also noticed a lot of people are like super into, I mean, including myself, effervescent wines and like Gruners that are like slightly effervescent. I mean, people love that. It's interesting.
No, I've always dug it. You know, I always talk about, you know, we talk about like the natural wine movement. And, you know, for me, it's always like, it's just the kids being into something new. Right. My era was those sommeliers made Grunewaldina famous.
Right.
Right. You know, those people, so there were people who had, you were considered progressive if you had more Grunewaldina than you had Merlot. Right. You know what I mean? And that, you know, so this is just a another transition that I feel like that, you know, I feel lucky to be able to live through. But there's definitely a lot more effervescent wines and sparkling.
I was going to say, Emily, because of your question that you wrote, you know, would champagne have been added to that question 20 years ago? So, all right, fuck, marry, kill.
Yep.
It sounds like everybody's marrying sparkling in this era.
Oh, I'm gonna marry white. I'm gonna fuck red, and I'm gonna kill rosé.
Oh, I'd never played this game before.
Yeah.
You know about curbing your dog, but not about marry kill.
It's a little unusual to play with you know inanimate.
And it's a tough one, right? Because like you know, for red, for me, like red gets. I get more hungover when I drink red wine. I love it the most.
The tannins.
But I don't. There's something about it that like it fucks me up worse than any of them. And white, I feel like I've always. I feel like I'm learning a lot more about white wines and the varieties. And then rosé, I also love, but I feel like there's. It's easy to find like a patio pounder that's not as interesting.
Pounder.
Yeah, that's why I feel like I'll kill rosé. But I don't hold fast to those. Those judgments.
You don't actually do those things to those wines.
Yeah, no. I totally get it.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, so I mean, what do you think? For me, I guess it'd be I'd fuck red wine, I would kill rosé, and marry champagne.
Word.
Oh. Yeah. Right,
there we go.
All right.
Yeah.
I love it all. I mean, I think Robert Parker had such a big influence on American wine in Wine Spectator and gave high ratings to these very heavy American wines or wines from around the world. I think almost our generation thinks that red wine was what people were drinking all the time, the whites and the other thing. I think because of that one guy had a big swath. Now, of course, things have changed. Mm-hmm. There's a million voices. There's wines everywhere.
The ratings...
Back then.
No, but I mean, they're all the wines are still rated. I don't know that it means as much to the layperson. I think it's more in a certain community.
No, I think it's still, it means something. It doesn't carry the same weight. I think it's like when you had rated wines and how they sold out. But like, there's still people who play that game. But the voice means less and less, especially as they start to go away. You know, I've never submitted my wines for any type of review because because I just never believed in it.
And
because
they're good. You don't need someone else to tell you they're good.
Yeah, but no one needs anybody to tell them what's good. Like, what's different? Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you either like this whiskey or you don't, right? I felt like wine to me was the same way. And I never bought off scores at any of the places I worked. I never cared. And so for me, it's like more power to the people. Either you like it or you don't. And that's always been my thing. And that's how I built my company.
You started a graphic design company.
Yep.
Do you think that subconsciously, did you ever pick wines based on labels?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I totally did. I mean, and everybody does. I mean,
I do.
Label shopping is fantastic.
Yeah. I think as you know, in the industry, if you ever talk about packaging or marketing, then all of a sudden it was like you weren't an artist anymore. And I just thought that was bullshit. There's people who pay tens of thousands of dollars to have labels designed, and it is an integral part of it. And even if you had no marketing, if you just put it in a brown paper bag, that's still marketing, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so for me, we totally picked on labels. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, as I became more and more immersed in wine, I understood like some of it was gimmick, some of it wasn't. But, you know, for me, it was more about, you know, you can't judge a package, you know, anything by its cover, a package by its cover, or a wine by its cover.
Well, I know that I'm missing a whole genre of wines of like the old school script and like mostly
you mean
the
like
French
the,
wines.
What do they call that? The design, the label of the family. It was called the emblem.
The crest?
Is this we'll explain it to the listeners, but this is a popular wine right now, right?
It is. Very popular.
Can you So it was gifted to me by my partner, mm-hmm. who's like an enthusiast.
Trig is showing a wine bottle label that is only an image. Yes. Is there no name?
No, there's
it's
a there's
a name. There's a woman on a lady, face. A picture of a drawing of a lady.
Yeah, why? I haven't opened this, but I've definitely seen it around. I think like People's maybe selling. But it's like definitely. I get the impression that it's hip, and I'm excited to drink it.
Because of the label, you're saying?
Well,
it's natural wine. It's a pretty famous natural wine, and actually they were just, there was a huge festival, I think, in Slovakia or Slovenia or something like that. But anyways, it's a really famous one. I don't know much about the wine in general, but I have seen it.
Cool.
Everywhere.
Yeah. It's funny. It's like
dare we say the name? It won't be an endorsement.
It's just and you probably you guys listening probably would recognize it, but it's a very light sketch of a woman's face, and I think they're all in that realm. They're very.
Well, you
I gotta find the picture again.
When
Sorry.
You find it, China. That's okay.
I shop by region. I like I know I like the Nebbiolo grape, and I like mm-hmm. Valtellina, which is also, I think, the Nebbiolo grape. Mm-hmm. It's the Sforzato. So 99% of the time. And then if I'm stuck in a French place, I will always order Bandol, because Alice Waters taught me to.
Yep.
And that's why I would not kill rosé, because of Bandol Tempier.
Speaking of a label that I would probably... not pick because of its design, but because through you and through Alice, and I'm familiar with it. Otherwise, it's one that I would definitely overlook.
Well,
it
you
is
know
too
what,
much of an old-fashioned sort of label vibe for me.
Do you know what part of the label most people look at that I know is? Is it Kermit Lynch? Is it those other guys? Because those are the distributors, the merchants, if you will.
Right. The importers on the back, right? Yep.
Do you shop by that too? I mean, how does one... Or do you only serve your...
No.
You have a distributor.
Do you use multiple distributors or?
Yeah, so we make domestic wines, so we don't have an importer, but we use a distributor in almost every single state.
And you take their recommendations and bring in the case of something they really push.
For the wine store.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's just generally like, you know, I'm one of those guys that's like, hey, I looked at your portfolio. I'm interested in this, this, and that. I'll take that because I know that person and that wine is great. And then bring me something that's important to you, that's important to your company. And then bring me something that you're excited about. And that's generally how I bought for all the places I bought for.
Well, we first heard your name through our friends at Kane Winery because you were buying a lot of vintage wine for the Hambar.
For the Hambar, Sons. So, yeah, I was buying a lot of stuff at auction.
What distributor do you use here? Sorry to interrupt you. But for everybody that wants to... try your wine or
Banville is my mm-hmm. distributor, but I mean I think most people listening to the radio don't buy it for restaurants, or maybe
they do
the industry.
I'm sure there's some industry folks,
but you can find it pretty much at most wine shops
here in
New York. So New York has been very good to me.
Cool.
That's a great place.
Civilly
inattentive to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
How great.
Don't come in here, but we'll buy your wine.
Yeah. They drink don't my talk wine to and me. They don't thank me or know who I am.
I'm going to be looking at my cell phone the whole time, but I will buy a lot of wine from you.
No, I only just met Andre recently, but between Kane Vineyard and I've known Leah, who mm-hmm. owns Banville for a long time, and when I worked for Cesare Casella, one of the wines he always had on his wine list at Sulla Maria Rossi was... your OPP,
yep, absolutely.
Other people's Pinot.
Well, typical main course OG hosted by Emily Pearson and Trig Brown is we are finally getting to the theme of the show about 30 minutes in.
Which is the best of 2019.
Yeah, this is a look back show.
Content cranking.
But it doesn't just have to be 2019. It could be of all time. Like,
or what about of the decade? We're closing out the
what
teens?
About the end of centuries?
Conclusion.
The end of centuries, which we're not in now. But, you know, the 1890s, the 1990s, the
1790s. Rumor has it we're going back to the 20s.
Yeah, we can go back to any day. So is just a look back.
Next year.
Oh, yeah.
Aren't we going to call it the Roaring 20s all over again? What are
we
That'll
be interesting.
It?
I do think things happen cyclically, mainly because we count in tens and hundreds. But I do think like the 99 year of every century is a time of chaos. And what's going to happen? And
Y2K.
Usually the answer is nothing.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So let's just, focus a little bit on this past year.
What's first?
Culinarily, what was your best bite of 2019?
Something at Winsun. I was open to Taiwanese food for the first time, and their baked goods and their specials and the tasty kind of vegetables, the way vegetables can be so tasty, you feel like meat. I mean, I was really turned on to that cuisine.
All the things that Patrick doesn't know how to pronounce,
Patrick.
Too. Right? Yeah. Like Lou Ronfon? No, I got Lou that wrong. Lou Ronfon.
Yeah.
Did you have a best bite, Trig, of 2019?
Best bite
or an epiphany?
Honestly, this is ridiculous, but I can't stop thinking about it. I had this had some amazing tacos on the street in L.A. And I like can't stop. It's probably my favorite food of 2019. Mm-hmm. It's like in Venice, outside of Venice, there's like a when it goes out to the main strip. I forgot I think it's Rose or something, but mm-hmm. There's a parking lot. I think there's a Whole Foods in the parking lot actually. And
I know which one you're talking about. I don't know the place. I know the Whole Foods there.
That Whole Foods, mm-hmm. it's a huge parking lot and a big strip. And there's like on the median, a white van kind of sets up a card table and a rotisserie, and they're slicing a pineapple off the top of the al pastor and catching it in the taco, and they've got bucha and tongue and brains, and it's like all the. You know, I don't like to eat awful just to eat awful, but like when it's right, you know, it's the best. It's some of the best, especially for tacos. And, you know, a dollar a pop, it's like the best intersection of value and flavor you can find. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, my
That's
God.
That's pretty cool.
That was awesome. Good
job. I don't know if it's my best bite, but in an epiphany, I never used to really like mortadella. And, I don't
Antonio
know.
Antonio Fiace's Tempesta's Artisans Mortadella.
Yeah, with Sicilian pistachio. Yeah, that mm-hmm. I really quite like.
It's adult sort of bologna.
I know, but
the wet meat.
you ruined my best bite epiphany of 2019.
Well, go on, finish.
No, no, just it's to be taught that you like something that you always thought you didn't, I think is... That was a big memory for me for this year.
Andre? I think for like mortadella, like I always felt like the nuts got in the way, right? Kind of thing. Like you couldn't really like, you know. But anyways, I love that mortadella as well. I think mine is more of a slurp. I had a oyster stew maybe about 2 months ago by the guys. I was at a dinner with Dr. Jessica Harris. Okay. And they had the honeysuckle pop-up and they did this oyster stew. I mean, it was amazing. It was like... You couldn't put it down. It was so good, but it was so rich.
Was it creamy?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was where are they from?
He's from Philadelphia. The guy's from Philadelphia.
Oh, cool, cool, cool.
And but it was this whole idea. He was talking about oyster, you know, oyster bars. This was an oyster bar in somewhere in the 1800s or something like that. But anyways, made this. I talked about it all the time. My wife was like, oh, my God. Like, will you still be quiet about like this?
Is
like
it
this
an on menu dish somewhere, or it was just a one night only?
Yeah, it was a dinner that, and I assume that it was something that this gentleman cooked. The chef cooked quite a bit, but it was the first time I had it, and it was just like, it was so good.
Do you slurp it with the oyster?
I mean, I picked it up.
Shell.
I just picked. We all picked it up.
Oh,
and
it's just
like,
one.
Trick.
Because it was
hit
you know,
the
was
slurp
little.
Sound effect.
Yeah.
We should have one of that. We should have a gastronomic sound machine.
Right, we have oyster stew on Christmas Day every year.
Oh, really?
It's like a southern, it's like a Virginia thing, I suppose, like Chesapeake Bay situation. Mm-hmm. So we'll, you know, my mom always makes it on Christmas Day. It's like
Andre,
like
you better get to Virginia.
But that's not good for leftovers, is it? That's not something you want to be eating a week later.
No,
like
no, no,
the
no,
turkey
no.
Sandwich.
It's like it's not like a turkey. But it goes. It gets
so
cash pretty quick.
You can't use your like leftover raw bar oysters for oyster stew the next day.
I mean, I don't think you have leftover raw bar oysters.
All right, fine.
Would you go at a
shuck them to order?
Well,
cruise. Would
you
eat from the oyster?
No, and
soup?
if you had asked me about worst bite. 2019, it was ceviche.
Cruise.
No. Ceviche.
Where? What ceviche?
In Cartagena in Colombia.
Oh, well, you should have been in Lima.
Well.
Your friend, how dare your friend have the wedding in Cartagena?
Yeah. Either way. I've been off ceviche since then.
Would you try it if you were in Lima?
I will try ceviche when I'm more
Her
prepared.
Skin color changed to the color of Lima.
Yeah. Where's the button when you need it?
But so best new restaurant. Can I go?
Yeah, of course.
I would like to make this. It's also a time of looking back. Obituaries, things that were lost.
All right.
And I do fault New Yorkers for not having embraced two restaurants that I literally went to 100 times. Between the two of them, I was there 100 times. That's a lot. Pasta Flyer.
Mm-hmm.
which was a fast casual, really progressive, very cheap, very fast, is gone. And Martina, that's Mark Ladner. And Martina was Danny Meyer and Nick Andrews' place. I loved, it was a pizza place on the east side.
I've been there quite a bit too, yeah.
I just love it. You go in, you're eating literally a world-class pizza in seconds, and then you're leaving, you're paying, you know, probably if you order wine and champagne and stuff, you could pay $60, but you could also be out of there for $13. Pasta Flyer, I think you could be out of there for $6.
Pasta Flyer was awesome. I'd go there every day if I had access.
And I loved his chicken parm. Was the best chicken parm of the thing, and New Yorkers didn't embrace it.
I think it was location.
I think New Yorkers failed those guys, because those guys were geniuses.
So both have come and gone. Pasta Flyer was on 6th Avenue off of 14th Street, and I don't know. I think it may not have been in the right
place. That's a tough area.
Fast casual, I think, has to look fast. If it looks like Del Posto, it might, or it looks like Maialino, it might, not, people might not feel like that food could actually be fast food. They feel it's going to be high end and have a waiter. I used to
work in Chelsea at Colicchio and Sons. Uh-huh. I wish I was working there when Pasta Flyer was open, because I'd be able to afford to eat there, and I would have gone and, you know, chilled in that, because it was a nice setup. I agree with you. Like they could have made it maybe like less comfortable or less beautiful
to make it look like what it was, which is fast food. You could be in and out of there in a minute and a half if you downed it. That pasta literally took like 30 seconds to make.
Yeah, I don't know. Dope. I think it was neighborhood being in, like, you need a strong following to like get things kickstarted. And over there, I think that like the design of a space and the layout and the look, you know, it's, if it doesn't look inviting and you can't really see the sign, or it's a strange, you know, which side of the street are you on? It can make or break something, which is too bad. Andre, how about best restaurant for you? Doesn't have to be in New York.
Nah, Crown Shy.
Oh. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Delicious.
So, yeah, that was, I feel like I've eaten a whole bunch of different places, but that was like kind of the most memorable one.
Crown Shy's down in the financial district at 70 Pine.
That building is really cool too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that chicken is amazing.
Very Art Deco. Is that the chicken with the foot? No.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes.
Chicken with the foot.
It's a little scary looking. I'm not the biggest. Upland also does a chicken with the foot. I am not the biggest fan of keeping the foot on.
Well. Mm. That's silly.
Why?
You can use it as a toothpick.
It has a foot.
Yeah. Oh, a toothpick. Great.
Use it as a toothpick.
All right.
Feed her delicious.
Trey, do you have a favorite restaurant of 2019?
I'm not sure, to be honest with
you. Well, we went to Carbone. That place is very fun. If you want to eat and be loud and drink and stuff your face, that place is...
I've never been.
I've only been once, but I do think it's like... Yeah, I think... I mean, I guess a good question is like best restaurant that's been around that maybe you didn't appreciate until 2019. Maybe yours is Carbone, Patrick.
No, I don't know. That's a good question. A forgotten restaurant. Well, a lot of our restaurants, we sell to established restaurants, and they suffer by how many new restaurants open. A lot of people forget to go back to Union Square Cafe, which is doing fine, by the way.
Yeah.
But, you know, they don't go, they take a risk on a new thing, and I think are more often disappointed and don't go to the hallmark restaurants. I don't know. Is that true?
I believe there's some truth to that. I think everybody's on this constant thing to go, what's new, and then you kind of forget about stuff that's like quality and a staple, and like they knock it out of the park every single night.
I think, if I had my choice, I would go to new places much less often. I would wish New Yorkers would reward the best restaurant. Because I do think there's too many restaurants.
Have you ever been to Desi's Clam Bar on Graham Ave? On Grand Street?
No.
In Williamsburg?
Like Desi Arnaz?
No. It's delicious. And it's like nobody even really, I feel like nobody knows it's there. Mm. So good.
That whole stretch, Grand and Williamsburg, has got a cool little area.
Yeah.
No, you don't think so?
No, I mean, I feel like a lot of people get lost on that stretch.
There's Four Horsemen, Emmy Squared, there's Gertie.
This is a little bit further down, though. All right, this is like closer to Winsong.
Well, I'm just excited for 2020. Cobble Hill is like making a comeback as far as restaurants. Our friend who used to be at the Breslin, Mark St. Jacques, is opening a place. Oh. I think they opened this week called Barbette.
The big Canadian.
Yeah, very, very tall, big guy. But I just keep hearing about things opening. It's been such a food desert on Smith Street. So
I still ask, where will all the chefs go? I mean, in 40 years, when there's 25 million ex-chefs, I mean, they're just old and retired. So
would you like to share your theory with our listeners and
Andre?
Take
me out to pasture.
I think there's going to be great chefs cooking on every block for the community and leaving the meal outside the door. Like if you live in a big building, you could have four basically resident chefs who service your building, and you pick your favorite. And that guy might be making 60 meals a night.
More and more residential, like high-end buildings are, you know, opening or small food concepts that are meant to be for the residents with priority. So maybe that'll be part of the design.
There's not as much push for that because most of the chefs are still young. I mean, when I was in the 70s in New York, there might have been, I don't know, I'm going to say a stupid number, 1,500 restaurants in the city, 2,000, 4,000, 5,000. Now what is there? 1.2 million? It's ridiculous, you know? There were also fewer delis and everything. It was just a smaller community.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, what about a favorite destination of the year?
I always like Charleston. I've been going there quite a bit. It's always a favorite of mine, and then it's been really great as the food scene has evolved. But that's kind of my favorite place to go to right now.
I haven't been. It's on my list for sure. I feel like I need like a week, though. There's many restaurants. Yeah. It's like all you want to do is go and eat.
Well, and it's got great history. You know, it's this by the water. You know, it's just it's really cool. And, you know, it's definitely got that southern charm.
I went to Portland, Oregon for the first time this year. Liked it. Yeah, it was my first time. I didn't get to the Willamette Valley. For my next visit for sure.
That is my favorite terroir by far, the Pacific Northwest. I think certain parts of it with like 20 feet of topsoil or something absurd.
It's pretty
cool. Fruit, right? Mm-hmm. Grapes. Yep. What terroirs in Europe would you say are most closely aligned with the Willamette Valley?
We always talk about Burgundy, right? So it's pretty much the same type of climate without the hailstorms.
And what about in Italy?
I don't know.
It's more Burgundy than anything.
Yeah, it's more Burgundy. I think, you know, I mean, actually, there's only like maybe 5 people in the whole valley that are actually growing Nebbiolo, but you should check it out.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And it has a ton of terroirs, right? Oregon is very progressive in bringing acknowledgement and attention to specific hills.
Correct. Yeah. No, absolutely. It's not as like as much as like say like Napa Valley, but it is broken down into 6 specific different AVAs within the Willamette Valley. Mm-hmm. I think even the Gorge just got their own Pacific, they got their AVA, Van Duzer. So it's like it's really cool. Like it's changing a lot.
How do those people apply for a designation? Who do they go to? What's the process?
I think you apply to the government. I don't know the whole process myself, but
have to show how your grapes are different.
Yeah, I'm sure there's that. You know, there's scientists involved in that kind of stuff that talk about how this is different and this and that, and then you present it. But it's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool place.
We have to take a very quick break. We will be right back to talk more wine and holidays with Andre Mack.
You listen to Heritage Radio Network because, let's face it, you have really good taste. You care about where your food comes from, who made it, and its impact on the planet. Whether you're looking for an inspiring interview with your favorite celebrity chef, the latest on Dave Arnold's Spinzall, or if you want to get down and dirty with some agricultural policy, we've got you covered. 10 years in and 13,000 episodes later, HRN continues to be the go-to media outlet for thoughtful eaters like you. And we never could have done it without the support of our listeners. Help Food Radio continue in the future and help us raise enough funds for the year to come. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate today. And since you've got such good taste, we have some very cool member gifts for you to choose from. Thanks for listening and for being a part of the HRN community.
This episode is brought to you by Fair Kitchens. The food service industry faces a challenge. More people are eating out, yet restaurants are losing talent. Why is this? Research by Fair Kitchens reveals a serious well-being issue within professional kitchens. 74% of chefs are sleep deprived to the point of exhaustion. 63% of chefs feel depressed, and more than half feel pushed to the breaking point. This can't be ignored. Fair Kitchens is a movement based on the belief that a positive kitchen culture makes for a healthier business. By taking the pledge to be a Fair Kitchen, they'll provide you with free information, tools, and resources to help you take action towards making your restaurant more stable, productive, and happy, which positively affects the guest experience. It's time to act now. Learn about the Fair Kitchens Code and join the movement at fairkitchens.com.
All right, and we're back. This is the Main Course OG, broadcasting live on Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We're here in the studio with Andre Mack of Ann Sons and Maison Noir Wines. We've got Trig Brown of Windsun and my co-host Patrick Martins. It's the end of the year, end of 2019, end of the decade. Holidays always means party time. I feel like some people love them, some people hate them. What's your favorite style of party to attend this time of year?
Tree trimming party for me. I feel like it. There's a theme, right? And it's over pretty quickly, so you can kind of sneak out. But I like that versus the holiday party, the corporate, you know, the work holiday party.
Is the etiquette there that you must bring an ornament?
Yes.
I think it should be.
Yeah.
You know, something in hand.
Made ornament or purchased?
Either or.
Okay.
Have you made your own ornaments recently, Patrick?
No. I don't. I'm not. Well, I'm Jewish, so you know, we had a Christmas tree, but we didn't have the backing of that tradition in our culture. You know, so we turned on the Christmas tree thing, but we, you know, we put.
Did
lights
you call
on
it a Hanukkah bush?
No,
no.
That's
okay.
Awesome.
I grew up with. I don't know. Probably a split. Like half my friends are Jewish, half my friends are Christian.
Did you have a Hanukkah bush?
So my dad is not Jewish. So we were raised Jewish, but we always had a Christmas tree. But I had friends who were very jealous. So tree trimming was a very big thing. Mm-hmm. When Hanukkah falls at the same time, we would do like a latke party with tree trimming. For me, that's the best.
Is it tree trimmed? Or is it you're saying you just add the things? There's no cutting going on, right? Pruning, nothing.
No, I don't know the history behind it, but it's just, you're just decorating the tree.
So like curbing your dog, we don't know the origin of tree trimming. All right, we're gonna look it up. What is your go-to gift to give a party host if it's not a tree trimming party? What do you bring?
Bottle of wine?
A prosciutto.
I always bring large format champagne.
Oh, nice. Smart.
That is a step up from a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Now, with the expectation it will be poured while you're there, or it's like a gift?
Good question.
It depends on what it is. If it's something really rare and I want to taste it, I make sure I open it up. But the big don't is you don't take a bottle that you left, that you bought as a gift. That's fucked up.
Oh, to take it back?
Yeah, a lot of I've seen people do that. They're like, oh, I really wanted to drink it, but they didn't.
They
no
didn't
one
pour
opened it.
It,
and so they go back and grab it, and that's
oh, that's tacky.
That's poor form.
Someone, I swear to God, once took half of a loaf of bread back. We had a party. I was like, times must be hard on the boulevard.
The only time that is allowed is if the host is like, I can't have all of this in my house.
Absolutely.
Please take it, and packs people with like, you know, leftover bags. Trig, what's your go-to holiday party gift?
I think I would do a bottle of wine.
Yeah. Vin?
Yeah.
Bottle of vin?
I was reading, Eater did a piece and like asked a bunch of celebrities, and Questlove said he always brings a record.
That's cool. Nice. That's on brand.
You know, I'm doing, I have a barter with John Spencer of Blues Explosion, meet for records, and I've just got my fourth cardboard box of these old records from his era, which is really cool. He's basically curating me an awesome selection in exchange
really
for
cool.
Turketa roasts.
Barter's where it's at.
That's a good
really
deal.
Cool. Barter is where it's at. I love it.
We just did
it.
$1,000 barter with Jackson Family of Wines, and me, Emily, and Catherine, you know, and a couple of members of the team also are going to basically split that thing.
That's
in
awesome.
In exchange
yeah.
for $1,000 worth of meat, which is hard to do when you see that package get built. You're like, barter is good. Barter is good.
Do you and Anne within your own house barter cheese for meat? You're like, Anne, please bring home a wheel. I will bring home a turchetta.
I actually am real. I love being super generous. The one thing I'm like super cheap on is like hotel rooms. I will like force four people to share.
Oh, I'm familiar.
Rather than spend $69 for an extra room.
I've worked with Patrick at Heritage for 3 years. I'm familiar with his not loving the hotel room splurge. You also said I'm never allowed to help you shop for family holiday gifts ever again. I spend too much of your money for
I've
you.
Lost thousands of dollars. I'm like, I wanted a pair of pants. You send me to this place, it cost me $400.
All right. And if you go to a holiday potluck, what is your go-to dish? What do you bring?
To bring?
Mm-hmm. I always bring a salad. You know what? I don't want to end up in a meal where everybody brings a protein and then you get protein. No greens.
Has anyone ever been like, this is awesome
yes.
and meant it?
Yes.
Just kidding.
Even better is if I, you know, if it's already built and neatly layered and
if
you come with your own bowl.
Cobb salad, maybe.
All right, fine. It's got to have bacon and blue cheese in it for it to win over Patrick's heart. Trigg, what do you bring?
Ooh, I don't know. Maybe some cheese or a steak or something.
I do charcuterie.
Is steak weird?
Yeah, that's me. Same
a
thing.
Cooked steak?
I mean, no, you can like give a steak and it's like a cop out for you don't make a dish, you just bring a steak. You go, hey, here you go.
No, I
12 ounces.
They're not gonna be upset, you know.
I usually do the meat and cheese board, but salads also. Salads. I'm known for that.
I do like making sure, if I'm fearful that the food will not be good, sometimes I might bring something else, like a turquetta roast, but
no way.
My friend Garrett, a lot of potlucks.
My old friend I used to work with, and Garrett Oliver, always used to bring, I don't know if he still does, a little vial of sea salt, which will elevate any dish that's lacking.
But that's all he brings? Just a little?
Well, for himself, secretly, not secretly now that I said that, but I'm sure he doesn't use
like
it at your
like
dinner.
Finishing salt.
Yeah.
You could do the same thing with a mini Tabasco bottles.
Yeah.
That's like, God forbid the person totally overcooked everything and it tastes like nothing. Just add a little
bit. Then it might as well taste like Tabasco.
Yeah, right.
So, Andre, you're about to open a restaurant concept, and you have a wine shop. Tell us about the two.
Yeah. I think this whole journey started, I turned 40 almost 7 years ago, and I bought a vintage Burkel meat slicer. For my home, and we needed stuff to put on it, and so we asked some of our restaurant friends, and that's when I kind of started getting into country ham and all that kind of stuff. So it's a charcuterie bar, so like a ham bar, very reminiscent of the ham bars that you see in Barcelona and Spain, but with a twist. It's all American, so all American charcuterie, all American cheese, and all American wine with a focus on wines from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and so it's kind of like an homage to American food culture. And so, you know, it's easy for us as Americans to romanticize about other cultures and the way they've done things, and they've done things for a very long time. But sometimes I think we overlook what we've been able to accomplish too in a short or relatively short part of time. Or I mean, like, look, we have wines from the 60s on our wine list, and you know, so we're like, wow, we've been making wine since the 60s. So I just wanted to showcase that, and you know, it's really just an extension of our home, which is right around the corner. Obviously, I got this machine. We started to entertain. They got big and out of hand, and we decided that we would do something around the corner. And so that's we awesome. Have one space. It's the ham bar. And then next door, opening the second quarter of 2020, will be Anson's Buttery, which is basically our larder. So you can buy all the meats and cheeses. You can recreate what we do in the ham bar at your home. And that's next door.
And can you also buy wine there, or you have to go a few blocks away to
Vineyard? Yeah, you have to
Vineyard.
Go about four blocks down, and you can go to Vineyard. We purchased a wine shop about 5 months ago. And so just kind of loop it in. We don't sell any. We just sell wine, which basically differentiates us from the other wine shops in the neighborhood. We're the actual wine shop.
So right. Do you give like a $10 off coupon to people at the ham place so it really encourages them to go to that wine bar?
No, we do it the other way. We just basically slice meat on the board. And with all our tastings, you can come and taste meat. And if you like it, you can go up, you know, you can go up the street when we are finally open.
So early 2020, we can come to Anson's?
Yes, maybe the first week of January is what we're looking at.
And what's the origin of the name?
Anson's, it's for our four sons. I have four boys ranging from the age of 11 to 11 months. And it's for, we've lived in this neighborhood for 10 years. And so there's nothing but boys. My kids have grown up with other sons on that block. And then it's the proverbial America's sons.
Wow, you've won up my three sons. That was a sitcom with, what was his name?
Fred Murray.
Murray, yeah.
Yeah, actually, it's Murray Ranch. He owned a winery.
Wow.
A vineyard, yeah.
Does Joe Montana own a winery in Oregon, or is that Northern California?
In Northern California, okay. Yep.
Does everybody own a winery these days?
A lot of people. Well, Yao Ming, I know, is into wines. There's
Dave
a lot
Matthews.
Of, Dave Matthews.
Mm-hmm. Oh God,
it's a great
Charlottesville. Yeah, it's huge. Yeah.
I went to Hudson. My friend Christina Salas-Porras. We went to Hudson Winery. It's a huge estate, and he took such great joy. And I was fascinated by, you know, he had a huge map of his farm and the terroir, and when the sun hits, and the workers, and how many workers are at each place, and when they harvest. It is an awesome. It's the true definition of culture.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, to make something pleasurable, but they're also very, of course, aware of fair workers, and you know, these are people that are going to work with them for 40 years, you know, and yet they could be picking the grapes. So it's a very touching microcosm.
Where was this at?
Hudson Wines is in, you know, Napa Valley.
Oh, Lee Hudson.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I love that guy.
We're friends with him through Christina, the cane guy, and my buddy Chris Carpenter.
Yeah, Chris is amazing.
Chris Carpenter.
Chris came with us to Hudson.
Yeah, Chris Carpenter came.
Patrick and I were fully drinking our wines at the tasting, and Chris was more of a true taster, more of a spit bucket kind of guy.
Emily and I had to get carried to the car.
Exactly. So you have Maison Noir wines in the Willamette Valley, and how did you end up in that region?
I've always loved Pinot Noir. You know, some of the great wine lists that I've had a hand in building, they bookend on red and white Burgundy. And so when I was thinking about quitting and moving on to do something else, I wanted to continue to learn about wine, but I wasn't going to move to France or anything like that. And I felt like the best thing for me to do was to make wine. I was going to continue to learn. And so yeah, Oregon was a place that always spoke to me. It was something that I championed at the French Laundry and on the wine list at Per Se. And so things kind of worked out in a weird way where a friend of mine bought a vineyard there, and that's kind of how I ended up there. You know, it was great, right? We had, you know, less competition than, say, California. It was a lower barrier of entry. Mm-hmm. And so, I loved it there and the people there. And so that's kind of how I got there. But I was committed to raising my family in New York. And you know, it was something that I felt like I moved to New York and unsight unseen in 2004, and I felt like, wow, it just would have been cool to grow up here. How cool would it have been to grow up here? And then I married a New Yorker, and you know, and so now I get on a plane every single week.
So you just came out with the book, 99 Bottles,
yes.
A Black Sheep's Guide to Life-Changing Wines.
Yep.
It's been said that your book is paving the way for wine entrepreneurs from all walks of life. Tell us why everybody needs this book. It's a beautiful hardcover book. It looks fun, and I've never really seen a table of contents that looks quite like it.
I think everybody should read it because it tells my story. And I think for most people on the outside looking in about wine, they think that this is something that you need to be born with. And as you start to read my book, you realize that I learned about wine by watching old episodes of Frasier. And that's really how I caught the wine bug, and then it evolved into something else. And so, you know, it's 99 bottles. We say life-changing wines because they changed my life and shaped my life. Not necessarily is it going to change your life to drink these wines. What I encourage everybody to do is
find
your 99. Find out what are your 99 wines that you could tell your story.
That's good. And I like it. It encourages a consistency in purchasing.
Correct.
Versus always the new, always
Correct.
The new. And
Correct.
I want to try something. No, the new should be 10-20% of a life. The 99 should be the 95%. That's the way I've always thought it. So that's a great thing phrase it that way.
No, so it was a fun experience. You know, I didn't realize that I had so much to say. It is designed and it looks the way that it looks. If anybody knows me, in the way that like it's a spoof off of a wine guide, so you look at it, it looks like a wine guy guide, but it's actually a guide to my life. You read this book, you'll know a lot more about my life, but secretly you'll know a lot more about wine.
Will you find your phone number in here, address?
Well, I
my
like
phone
this.
Number is on there.
There's
there.
An sure. There's an illustrated Andre. It says you are broad shouldered for lifting,
yes.
And you have excellent lung capacity.
Oh, yes.
This makes a good wine drinker an illustrated Andre
funny.
Mac.
Absolutely,
that's funny.
So funny.
All right well great show.
We can't wait to visit Ann's Sons.
I can't wait to have you guys in. It's
going
to be great.
And thanks, everyone, for a great 2019. This was our first full year back on the air as the Main Course OG. Mm-hmm. We started mid-2018, so we're looking forward to 2020.
Hope Trigg comes becomes an official co-host.
Would be an honor.
We're going to send the contract. Really? You want to say it on air right now?
Amen.
All right. 2020.
It's good for ratings.
An
good
official
for our show.
Main
chef.
Course OG co-host.
Oh, God. Thanks. Yeah.
Everyone have a great, happy, and healthy new year. And
thanks,
we'll
Andre.
See you in Thank 2019. You thanks, Andre, for joining
Sweet.
Us. The Main Course OG is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.